Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this week, I have a very special guest, one Matt McMatt.
Oh, hey, that's me. How you doing?
I'm well. For people who might know you by your alias, some people also call you Matt McWaters.
Yeah, that's my actual name, but according to every tournament entry Zosha does, I go by McMatt.
Okay. So, Matt, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself for people who might not know you yet.
Oh, hi there. So I was born in California and lived there for a long time, but my whole family's Canadian, so I ended up moving to Montreal, which is a French city and a French province in Canada. And it's where I really picked up War Machine. It was a weird experience. My meta is bilingual, which is fine. But all of my groups are in French. So I get to have kind of a really interesting experience of trying to decipher, when people are talking about War Machine, I can understand one out of every five words. It's like, something, 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 Archon, something, 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 assassination, which is fine. But besides that, I've been playing competitive War Machine for a few years and playing War Machine for about six. That's about it.
Okay. So before War Machine, did you, were there any other games that you were a big fan of?
Oh yeah. I played a lot of, 40K and fantasy. I played, a lot of it. I traveled a bit for it, but, you know, it's one of those things where it's an enjoyable game, but if you're looking for something competitive, I didn't really find it there. I played a lot of Magic the Gathering, had some success there. Play a lot of video games. You know, try to become pro in League, and that was an interesting experience. But besides that, just nothing else really.
Okay, and so within War Machine, what factions have you focused on?
So when I started playing, I was hardcore into trolls. I played trolls for like 3 years straight and didn't even look at other factions. But with kind of Mark III and changing careers a little bit, I had a little bit more money, and I just started rotating through every faction, which was a very expensive endeavor. So I don't really feel like I have like a quote unquote main faction or anything like that, but I definitely found that as I played more games and as I played and rotated through every faction, you kind of picked up on like a play style I enjoy to play, and most of my lists follow that play style rather than following a faction.
So what would you say your play style is, or how would you define that?
So I don't tend to play bricks. One of the things I realized is like I like to play things with lots of activations. And this has basically always been true of my experience in War Machine. So like when I play lists, I tend to have like lots of garbage in my lists and smaller units and solos and stuff that I can have more freedom to activate with. So a lot of the times when I go to play a new faction, I build these lists and everyone's like, you don't have any of the things that make that faction good in it. Like playing trolls without like any of the cool units like champions or anything like that, or playing mercs without any of the cool value solos, stuff like that, just to have more stuff on the table. So that tends to be what it is. And you can basically build lists like that in every faction. You know, casters that help garbage models shine a little bit, and then, you know, having lots of garbage models.
Cool. So real quick, I'll go ahead and give an overview of the format of what we're going to do, and then we'll jump into some questions. So this first episode of the meta will be around 45 to 50 minutes, and this will be the main episode of the meta that's free for everyone to listen to. And most of the content of this will be questions from people who back us at the $2 Patreon backer level. And then we'll continue the discussion in a second episode that is also around 45, 50 minutes. And that is one that's available for people who back the meta on Patreon. So we can go ahead and jump right in and get going with some of the questions from our Patreon backers.
Sounds great.
All right. So, from Dr. Glenn, he says, why did Matt play 200% more Kador models than he needed in his pair?
I love the Diet Kador. So honestly, I just really wanted to play some Zarkova 1. She is really sweet.
Real quick before we dive too deep into this, for people who might not know this inside joke, at Warfare Weekend, you played a Flame in the Darkness list with Zarkova 1, where the only Kador model in it was Zarkova 1, and then you played a Warriors of the Old Faith list with Vlad 3, where the only Kador model in it was Vlad 3. And so that's kind of what Dr. Glenn was commenting on. And so with that background, I'll go ahead and let you dive back into what you're saying.
Yeah, so... someone started a meme after this. I'll go back to what I was saying, but the Diet Kador, and I absolutely love it. I think it's hilarious. And I played a lot of Kador. When I first started playing competitive War Machine, I played Kador, and I really tried to learn from Bubba and learn how to play Kador the same way he did and all that stuff. And so I've always had this kind of love-hate relationship with playing Kador. So when Kador got access to Flames in the form of Zarkova 1 and I guess Zarkova 2, I was like, all right, I'm going to play Zarkova 1 and I'm going to play a bunch of good stuff with her and it's going to be super fun. She's one of the last casters with a Mark 1 style hard control feat. For those that are unaware, her feat says models beginning their activation in her control cannot run, charge, special attack, special action, and while within her control, they cannot make range attacks. So it's just this classically, you don't get to do anything feat. And I mean, the not run portion almost always catches someone out. So, just the enjoyment of playing that with a really strong list, and the your caster being immune to spells, your army being immune to spells, your battle group being immune to spells, untargetable by spells, really adds a lot of depth to the amount of tools you take away from your opponent. And then the Vlad 3 list is really just something that I was a little bit worried about running into Sloan or Harbinger, and Zarkova really doesn't want to play those matchups. So I brought something that was a little bit more tooled for those matchups.
So one of the, I did commentary on your last two games at Warfare Weekend, and we would see some of the questions or chat comments that were going on in Twitch or some of the various places it was going, and there was actually a fair number of people who were a little, it almost felt like hurt or offended that you were playing Kador lists with that few Kador models. And you know, there were jokes like, oh well, I finally figured out how to win with Kador, just don't play Kador models, and
oh boy.
You know, jokes like that. But do you have any thoughts or comments on people who were kind of feeling that way?
So my pairing could have very easily been Zarkova, Wolves of Winter, and Karchev. And I feel I would have been equally situated for the meta I was planning to play into. Realistically, I just wanted to play new things that I hadn't played before. And up until that point, I hadn't played Warriors of the Old Faith or Flames. And it wasn't like I had spent months preparing for this event or anything like that. I think 2 weeks before it, my store was like, oh, we're going to get all the models in on time. And I was like, all right, cool. I'm going to get them all painted in 2 weeks and I'm going to get 10 games. It's going to be enough that I'll be relatively feeling comfortable because I have a lot of experience with similar lists. But yeah, I think Kador is in a really great place in general. So I think that War Machine has come to a point now where a lot of people look at models, and in Mark II especially, we used to people used to take their identity from the faction they were playing. I remember a lot of conversations with people, and even myself, where I'd be like, well, I'm a Trolls player, or Marc-Andre LeBlanc would be like, well, I'm a Signar player, or whoever would be, I'm a Kador player. And in Mark III, a lot of people still try to have that mentality, but you have to be willing to adapt and change your lists and change your play style and kind of be flexible to succeed. And it's left a lot of people feeling like their faction choice or even caster choice or unit choice, theme choice, whatever, doesn't line up with what they expect, right? And I think that's where a lot of this stems from, is just you being rigid in spots when being flexible would be better.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, I think that it's becoming increasingly rare or less common that you have someone who's like someone like JVM or, you know, whatever, who is whose identity is very strongly tied to a particular faction.
Yeah, I agree. I think like the last two players that I really feel like, you know, one faction their things are JVM and Brad Park, who has played Krix for forever, it feels like. But yeah, it's a weird thing. And I think Kador is a super strong faction, and particularly with the new theme changes from Oblivion and access to Void Archons and Wolves of Winter, the faction is really wide and flexible. I'm a big fan.
Awesome. So next question we have from, this is from Hesse. He says, where do you get your inspiration for your lists? They're always enjoyable to read and to see on the table.
First of all, thank you very much. But the origin of how I build lists actually goes back to JVM, who we mentioned a little bit earlier. At my first ever War Machine weekend, I saw him pulling out models from his bag, and I was like, wow, I've never seen those models on a table before. And he goes, yeah, well, every year at War Machine weekend, I try to innovate something new that no one's seen before. And try to build something that only I know and I have practice with. And after that event, I kind of took that home with me and was like thinking about it. And I talked to one of my good friends, Brandon Andrews, about it. And he kind of like said, like, you know, playing something that is your own, it gives you this like really strong advantage. And, you know, I processed it for a while, and it took me a long time to get to the point where I was comfortable building things on my own and like understanding that not following the pack in terms of what people think is powerful is like a strength of its own. Like a lot of the times when I was very active in listening to podcasts, very active in being in like the online community, I would just end up playing what everyone else was playing. And I always felt like you had to do that. But as I started like being like, okay, I'm going to do my own thing, my list just became like extensions of, I want to play this caster or these models. What could I do to make them work? And my meta is like super active and very conducive and accommodating to me, where like if I ask someone for practice in a specific matchup, I get like five or six responses in like an hour or two of people like, all right, let's play on this day. I want to practice this matchup too. So I get to play a lot of like dumb things into really interesting matchups and just try to make models that I want to play work. And I think that's the core of how I build my lists.
Yeah, I mean, so granted, this is from the perspective of someone who does a lot of podcast content, and so it's probably a little bit slanted. But I would kind of say that two of the things that I think that podcasts can be the most helpful with are, one is if someone is kind of trying to start becoming a competitive player, then I think that a lot of times playing kind of the things that are dominant in the meta right now, it can be a good way for you to learn the game. And also I think that it can be valuable for someone like yourself, who is, I think that probably the optimal solution to tournament play is for you to be aware or cognizant of what the current state of the meta is, and then for you to be innovating or to be one step ahead of what most players are doing. And so in that instance, I think that in some ways podcasts can help you know what the current trends are or what's going on, for you to, not necessarily for you to follow them or for you to do them, but for you to be innovating answers that are a step ahead of it. And it sounds like that's exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with everything you just said. I feel like podcasts are a really valuable asset to the community in general. And like, I think that the biggest asset to the community in general is just being connected with each other. And podcasts provide that in a very big way. One of the big things I always enjoy is because like we all have different metas and different experiences. But one of the big things is when someone kind of gives away a little bit of that secret tech that they've been working on, or gives away a little bit of that, like, oh, here's how I play Iona into that matchup. And everyone who's been playing Iona gets to like kind of key in and win a matchup they didn't think they could before. And I think that's one of the big selling points of podcasts for me, is listening to people who, no matter how good or bad the player is themselves, they always have a unique take and a unique ability to pull from their experience, right?
Yeah. All right, so the next question isn't so much a question as just a statement of adulation, but I just want Matt to know that his Warfare Weekend list turned him into my personal hero. So have you had many people contacting you post Warfare Weekend talking about your list?
Yeah. So what I found is that as I started playing things that were weirder or more in like line with how I like to play, I guess, I just got more and more messages from people. And when I lost on stream in the finals of Warfare Weekend, I think I got like 40 or 50 messages from people being like, "Oh, you're still number one in my heart." Yeah, it was a good experience. There's really something to be said for the War Machine community in general. It's generally a very positive, very friendly, like I never would have expected a bunch of tabletop gaming nerds to have such a positive impact on my life. It's a genuinely good experience, and it's very heartwarming.
That's awesome. So the next question is going to come from Zap Brannigan.
All right.
He says, "Did you select your caster's themes and design your list specifically to play into the Warfare Weekend bracket?"
So there's actually a really funny story about this. So Jeremy Posner, who is a really great player and my round one opponent, and I've played him quite a few times. He's from the Virginia meta, I want to say, where the Mollywhoppers are from, Danny McGeehan and those guys.
Okay, yeah.
I've played him a few times, and I'm adjacently friends with him. Like we communicate, we have like a talking relationship. But I'm much closer friends with like Danny and like Baby Michael. And I was talking to one of my friends. I was originally planning on playing Minions for the Invitational. And one of my close friends shared my lists with Baby Michael. I was like, "Oh, look, he's playing something really cool and unique in Minions." And then Baby Michael went and took those and gave them to Jeremy Posner. And this is like a month or two before the event. So I was like, "Oh, come on, guys. I can't just play like my super, you know, off meta stuff and you know, without you guys ruining my secret tech." I didn't. Jeremy, after he found this out, he messaged me and was like, "Hey, Matt, I just want you to know that these guys leaked me your lists. And here's what I'm planning on playing. You don't have to tell me if you change anything, but I don't want you to feel like I have an advantage over you or anything like that." Which is super sweet, like super sweet dude. Especially because like it's his first Invitational, so he was like a super stand-up guy about it. After that whole thing, I was like, I don't feel like playing Minions anymore. So I just went through my collection and picked out what I could get reasonably painted and you know, what was new. So I didn't really like hone in on like, "Oh, I have to beat these matchups." It was more so like, what can I play that I feel gives me game into everything that's in the game right now?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you were the only player that did Infernals at WTC, is that right?
I think I had 3 or 4 months before WTC at that point to, you know, buy a full faction, paint a full faction, and be adequately practiced. So that meant I was getting like 10 games a week up until WTC, and then like the week of WTC I got like another 10 or 15 games. So like I think I got 112 games including WTC of Infernals.
Okay.
In about a 4 month period. I did not even want to look at the faction after playing 110 games of it in 4 months. I got home, unpacked my bag, and was just like, "I will play you guys in a few months. I don't even want to acknowledge you exist anymore." Like, I love them. They're an absolute joy to play. But holy moly, it's a lot of games with a faction in a short time. It was one of the things I enjoy about playing factions and game in this game in general is exploring and, you know, building new things. And when you're like super focused and locked in on one thing that intensely for that period of time, it's really hard to feel like you can build something new.
Well, we will circle back around and get some more thoughts on Infernals at a later point.
That's awesome. I'd love to talk about them. They're great.
Yeah. So next question. This is also from Zap Brannigan. Was your choice designed to create two lists that pulled units and solos from different factions in order to increase your advantage at list selection?
So I'm a firm believer that you shouldn't try to win War Machine at list selection. I know, like, this may just because of, like, when I got into the game, but I remember in Mark II going to a tournament and playing against Denegra II Body and Soul. And I was playing Trolls at the time, and I automatically lost the game on turn one. He put whatever the upkeep is on Mold at the start of the game, and I just lost. I didn't have enough pieces to do anything, and like there was nothing I could do. And it was one of the worst feelings in War Machine I've ever had. And for that reason, I purposely don't try to build lists that give me that like 90-10 list advantage. I'm a firm believer that if you want to grow as a player and if you want to, I don't know, have the most fun games possible, your goal should be to play as much actual War Machine as possible. So most of my lists are just designed to give me like really big sweeping games, like 50-50s or 55-45s into as much of the field as possible as my primary list. And then my secondary list will have like 4 or 5 matchups where it needs to be dropped in because my other list couldn't have been built to handle. I didn't really try to build as much list advantage as possible. I just want to play like War Machine and have a good time, and I don't want my opponent to walk away from the game being like, oh, well, I had nothing I could do. Because not only does that feel bad for him, it also makes me feel like less of a good player, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like I won the game because I skewed him out of the game, and that like, if you go to a tournament and you're playing 13 games or 5 games or 10 games, you don't want to feel like you won your games because, like, your opponent just couldn't play the game. That feels bad, right? Maybe it's just me, but...
All right, so Dr. Glenn asks, what faction will you be playing next?
Oh, that's a super interesting one. So I'm playing Signar right now. I'm playing Flames and Gravediggers. A little bit of Siege 2, Striker 2 action. Really fun. I absolutely am looking forward to playing some minions. Once the pig tanks are out, I want to play some Helga with pig tanks and like Void Archons go and they like kill a thing, teleport, hit something, slam it, it's now knocked down. Then the pig tank shoots it with trash guns and super cool, like little cool synergies. And like the cool thing about the slam is like oftentimes you can slam them from behind, so you get to threat extend as well. Excited about that. Trollbloods are actually really high up on my radar right now. There's supposed to be a dynamic update coming by the end of this year, or early January. And Dan Cox has been really pushing some really cool trolls lists using Runeshapers and Double Dunian Archons. And I really want to give them a try. That guy has some really sweet lists that he puts together. A lot of cool concepts and just like playing fun things. Besides that, I mean, it's like probably in February or whenever the Convergence update goes live, I'll be playing that. I bought myself a little bit of an early Christmas present and got myself one of the old Mark II all-in-one army boxes from like the 35-point list things. My store still had one sitting around, so I was able to pick it up and get some cool Father Lucant and some infantry. Yeah, man, I'm just really excited about a lot of things. War Machine's a really fun game, and I find that the more time I spend exploring and innovating things, the more enjoyable it is, and I basically just hop around to a new faction almost every month.
Yeah, this basically combos in well with the next question, is better question, which faction won't you be playing next year?
Yeah, that sounds like a question from someone who knows me well. I'm honestly we have an entire year ahead of us. I don't know what I won't be playing, but if I had to guess, oh man, let's see, let's roll some dice here. What do I not want to play? You know what? I think I want to play everything. I think I'm gonna play everything this year. I think I'm gonna try to lock in something for competitive play, and then like just innovate and do dumb stuff with other factions, because I can't just one list a faction. I have to play everything and do every interaction and have as much fun as possible.
That's one of the things that's interesting. So you had mentioned how, like, kind of the pressure that comes with doing the WTC and how you honed in really hard on Infernals. Like, one of the experiences I had with WTC was that I was really glad that I did it the years that I did it, but that I also feel good with saying that I never want to do it again because I realized something about myself that I would put so much pressure on myself because I didn't want to disappoint my teammates, that I would play lists long past the point that I was having fun with them, because I wanted to be sure that I, you know, had really mastered those lists. And so just that dynamic made it so that I don't really think that, because of the way that I react to the WTC, I don't think that the WTC is the right event for me. I could see myself going there and, you know, hanging out with people and then playing in the solo masters, and that could be amazing, but I don't think my personality is suited for the team event anymore.
Yeah, it's a weird experience. I echo a lot of that sentiment. My first year going, I was like super locked in on Crix, and I think I played 250. I have a spreadsheet somewhere with all my games in it. 250 something games of just Denegra 2. And I was like, sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, like, your meta must have been like so tired of playing against that.
Oh, it was funny, because when I first started playing it, everyone was like, oh, this list isn't that good. But by like 2 months in, my meta was like, okay, can you play anything else? We're tired of getting Dark Banished into Oblivion. It was a rough one. And I think by the time WTC came around that first year, I was so burnt on playing Crix. I remember going into my games and just like being super unmotivated to play. And like my captain at the time, Josh Bates, kept coming up to me and being like, Matt, what's up with you? What's up with you? Like, you're usually all fire and like, you know, excited. And like, he's like, you just look so bored. And I'm like, dude, I played like 500 games of Crix this year. I don't want to even play like anything anymore. I just want to curl up in a ball. And like with a bottle of alcohol. That's all I want to do. But,
WTC is the event for you then.
That was my first year. It was a rough one. This year I did the opposite approach, where I was like, all right, teammates, let's all pick like factions. You know, we all kind of like were like built a list of factions we were interested in early on in the year. And I was like, we all agreed, rather not I was not in charge of anything. We all agreed that we wouldn't lock in factions until after lock. And that we would, after lock and load, we would all sit down, lock in our factions, and really grind out games and like get to the tip top shape we could be in. And I think that, I think everyone on my team is planning to return again to WTC next year, which is a really big shift from the previous years where everyone was so burnt out they didn't want to play anymore. So I think that the like locking in later in the year and like just playing whatever you want the whole year, and then like using that enjoyment and experience to fuel the grind later on in the year is a big like shift. And I think you would even enjoy it with your you know, your personality traits now if you approach it with that mentality, right?
Yeah, I can see that. That's fair. So next question. This is from Joe G. He says, how much of a factor was your opponent's lack of familiarity with the theme list? Did you leverage that? How much of that was a factor at Warfare Weekend?
So I feel like this is going to be a big factor in a lot of games. In competitive play and like amongst competitive players, you'll hear a phrase thrown around a lot, which is a knowledge differential. So like this happens a lot when like at WTC with the knowledge differential between North Americans and Europeans in terms of how the different cultures play the lists. And this is even true of like how different people play lists differently. By the way, I apologize if my bird's like singing in the background. He's being a trippy bird. How different people play different lists. So what you'll find a lot of the time is people are familiar with like the overall construction of how the theme works. So like my first round opponent Jeremy Posner had played Flames before himself, and he was overall familiar with how the theme worked. But what's more like more impactful than like not knowing the theme is not knowing how you're going to apply the models from the theme. So like how like one of the concepts in War Machine that's very popular right now is modules. So like combining like different subsections of your army into independent things that can go function on their own without caster support. So like double Thamorite Archons and Amaro Archon and a unit of Vigilance. Is very independent and doesn't need any support to do what it wants to do. So you can go have that be on one side of the table and it'll win versus most other similarly pointed groups of models, or even like versus more points than they are, just because of how flexible that like module is. So I feel like a lot of the time when you enter into like these matchups and highly competitive events, people will be familiar overall with how it works, but not familiar with like the intricacies of like the positioning or like the intricacies of how certain things work on the table. So I think it was impactful, but I think what's more impactful is play decisions, I guess. If that makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
After all, both my round one and two opponents both had flames in their pairings.
Right.
And my round three opponent, I don't know if he was particularly familiar with flames, but he was aware of what it all did and based on how we were having the discussion.
Okay, so this is a follow-up question from Joe G. He says, what do you see as the key to successful list pair design in the era of multi-faction themes?
So for me, every list pair I build starts with picking one faction I don't want to have to play War Machine against. And I know I feel like I try to build generalist lists, but like I really, really, really don't enjoy playing against specific lists. It's like, it's not saying like whether they're good or bad, but like I don't like playing against Sloan because I always feel like every game I play against Sloan, I either have the proper tools and like all the things for that matchup or I don't. So I'll build a list that has like some answers for it that I feel like I can play a game versus it, but not that gives me an automatic win versus it. Because like the odds of you running into that specific matchup are really small, right? Like if you go to an event and there's 160 players in the Masters and you play 8 games, the odds of you running into specifically Sloan are like really, really small. So I don't feel like bringing specific tech for that, like a list dedicated to beating that is the way to go. But I think the way you need to construct pairings to kind of answer this wide field and like, you know, if there's 100 players at an event and all the factions are going to be represented in some way and you have no control over what faction you run into next, your list pair needs to be as flexible as possible. You need to have as many relevant tools as possible and you need to not sacrifice list power to fit those tools in. And like, that means that you need to not be super specialized, which is something that a lot of people struggle with, right? Like when I talk to a lot of players and they're sending me their lists or like asking me for advice on things, a lot of the times they're like, I can't beat Circle. So I built this like super specialized, I wreck Circle list. And now my pairing can't beat, whatever, Grimkin. And I'm like, well, that's because you're over teching. Like you need to like have the tools, like bring a mortality caster, that's fine. But also make sure that you understand how to play the matchup well enough that you can win the game 10 or 15 points down. And then use that 10 or 15 points that you've accommodated for with skill to open up that list for other matchups. Because at the end of the day, War Machine is a game of like on table skill and learning how to like play matchups and kind of like figure out all the puzzles that are presented to you is way more impactful than list design. So I guess my advice for building lists for this meta is bring a list that answers like as much of the like scenario terrain problems as possible, and also is just like not is very stable, has very few like holes in it, and then bring a second list that maybe gives you like a really good shot into a few things you were struggling with. Like maybe you don't have a local Grimkin player. And you need to have a list that feels really good into Grimkin to feel confident winning that matchup. So bring a list that can do that. Because a lot of War Machine is also like mental. Like you have to feel confident. And a lot of the times when I'm at an event, like one of the things I notice quite often is that when I play against someone, they'll be like super nervous and shaky and not confident that they'll win the game. Like whether it's because like quote unquote unnamed player or like they've never played the matchup or whatever. That's going to be one of your biggest detriments. So you need to make sure that whatever you can do in your list design to like give yourself the mental support to feel good about the games is what you need to do. Last year, I put Eilish in almost every list I built because I felt like having Puppet Master was a big tool for to help me like mentally feel better about going for risky plays. And I think that's kind of like the same notion of like if you feel like I don't feel comfortable winning against Circle. Bring more tools for it so that you do feel comfortable.
One thing I'd recommend, I've mentioned this in multiple podcasts, but there's an author and game designer whose last name is Sirlin, S-I-R-L-I-N. And he has a book where each of the chapters is actually free online. And his background was he did competitive fighting arcade games, but he's also designed board games. And he goes, the book's very short, but it's really interesting in my opinion because it talks about a bunch of different concepts with game theory. And it talks about things like play styles. But another thing that I think is really interesting or relevant related to what you talked about is the mental aspect of the game. And one of the things he talks about is that some players develop, he calls it a fear aura, and that it's kind of like what you mentioned, where there's you'll play against some people and they've almost intimidated themselves into losing before the game has even started.
Yep.
And so, you know, I think that the mental aspect of the game is something that a lot of people don't necessarily pay enough attention to.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It was one of the first things that Corey Doyle said to me was, like, it doesn't matter if you're skilled enough to beat anyone, you just have to believe you can. And, like, that will be a huge step towards actually achieving that goal. Because if you psych yourself out and you're like, oh, I could never beat this guy or this list, or I made a mistake on turn two, and so now I'm going to lose the game, or whatever, like, mental block you put in front of yourself, like, you're not going to win, you're not going to accomplish your goals if you put that in your way. And you just have to be okay giving yourself the tools to kind of get over
it. Yeah. It's easy to say when you're removed from it, but, you know, that type of giving yourself that kind of mental handicap is, you know, just making your odds of winning that much worse. And so it's obviously something that you need to try to eliminate or not focus on. So next question. This is from GV Pony. He says, can we expect Matt to play Trollbloods competitively in 2020? And he says, parenthetically, this is not a joke question. Smiley face.
So I'm going to go out on a limb here and say this is from one of my locals, a good friend of mine, Guillaume Sartem.
Okay.
I just doxed him, I guess. Revealed his real life name on the internet.
Oh no.
Get wrecked. I'm actually super excited for Trolls. I've been talking about it a lot locally, and in like my various WTC chats. They're one of the factions that are least represented in the meta. And not for any like particularly good reason. It's just that they are remarkably hard to play, into a lot of matchups. They don't have lots of like bad matchups in the terms of like things they can't win, but they have a lot of matchups that are like you have to understand specifically how to play it. And those are the kind of things I really enjoy playing, those puzzles. So I think based on the dynamic update that's coming and the new releases, the Dunian Archon coming out especially, I'm really excited to kind of dive into Trolls and see what they can do. And I'm hoping that my boy Madrek 2 will be cracking some skulls come 2020.
Awesome. So your friend has some follow-up questions as well. Do you have any thoughts on the current playtest iteration of the Burl rule?
I absolutely love it. It's super cool. When Hungerford was telling me about it at Warfare Weekend, and like getting, he was basically like pitching it to the crowd and being like, what do you guys think about the two possible changes? I was a huge fan of it. I was like, this is super cool. Changes a lot of the way, like those two specific models, right? Cause burrows only on the Helldiver and the Pig Burrowers affect the game. It's really neat. I think that, I have some concerns about how it impacts early turn decisions, but that's probably good for the game. Right now we exist in like a meta where if you're a slower army, like trolls or, like Krix is very fast generally, but it can't hold ground well. So like if you're a slower or less durable army, you have a hard time against things like Circle or Scorn, who can push up the table super fast and aggressively. Man, I never thought I would say that. Never thought I would see the day where Scorn was a fast army. They can push up the table super aggressively and take lots of space before you're able to get there. And while Pig Burrowers coming up and shooting aren't the scariest thing in the world, they do add that like little bit of pressure that lets you kind of like hold ground, and I think it's a really, really good change.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for it. I mean, right now the models that have burrow are just purely collecting dust, and so it would be nice to see them get some play and make it onto the table.
Yep, I agree.
So another question from the same person. What list or faction have you had the least fun facing in a competitive setting, and why?
So I'm just like, I hate to put it this way because it is going to be like negative. There's no way I could not make it negative, but I just don't enjoy playing in Circle. And I understand, it's not like a Tharn thing. It's like a since I started the game thing. When I started the game, I was bad touched by a Circle player, and it was one of the worst experiences playing War Machine I've ever had. To this day. I was playing against Kruger 2, I was playing Trolls, we were playing on Destruction, he feated and won the game because I couldn't make it to Scenario. And it was, he didn't make an attack roll, he didn't do anything, he just did it. So it doesn't matter how good or bad Circle is, I just dislike playing against them. It's just like something inside me, whenever I see those stupid druids and the stone boys, I get so tilted. And like the worst part about this is like there was a point where Circle wasn't like the top of the meta, and I didn't lose games to Circle. I was playing factions that were really strong against it, but I just still didn't like playing against Circle. Go ahead.
I remember like there was this beautiful window where in Mark III where it felt like people weren't excited about Circle. They were very rarely played. You didn't see them across the table. And everyone's like, oh, they suck. Why would you play them? And it was just so glorious. It was so nice.
Yeah, it was the highlight of my War Machine times, to be honest. I didn't get to evade them much locally because one of my locals, Nicholas Rattel, is a fantastic Circle player and has savaged almost every WTC Canada player. It's insane. And, he was doing this with, Kruger 2 during that lull. And I never got to escape it. I was like, oh, no one's playing Circle. And then I would go to a steamroller and play against Circle twice or three times. Yeah, and it's bad. And then obviously Circle got this big resurgence with Tharn. And the well for Kruger 2 and the Hermit now opens up a lot of really cool. And, the lists are really cool. But, man, there's just something about, Circle's. Either I don't know if it's the aesthetic or the play style, or maybe it's just Circle players. I think it's just Circle players in general are just the worst. There's something that happens when you're like, I'm going to play Kruger 2 that just oof, he says while looking at his collection of Circle models.
Hey man, you're just preaching the choir here. So we've got just a few more questions from Patreon backers, and then in part two, we'll dig into some questions that I have for you.
Sounds good.
So Goek says, McWaters, are you famous or something? And then he says, what can we do to get Canadians to pre-register for the Nova Open?
The Nova Open. So, for a little bit of backstory, last year at Nova, they were fully booked, and they could have got more tables for War Machine if we had pre-registered. But because they were booked, and because Canadians as a large don't ever pre-register for any event ever, I don't know what it is about us, but we buy tickets at the event or on the way, on the drive there, we'll buy tickets for them. I don't know why that is a thing that we do, but having gone to many, many events with Canadians, we'll be in the car on the way there, buying the hotel and booking the event. I don't get it. It's insane to me because I'm very buy everything before the event, but I don't know what we can do to get pre-registration done earlier. I think that just being very vocal and maybe having someone push it. I honestly I'm not the organization guy. If you saw my house, you would understand. But what I can say is that I really enjoyed the Nova Open. It's one of the best events of the year, and I know I'm gonna sell it a little bit here and say the prize support this last year was phenomenal, and just some of the sweetest dudes, great organization. And after this year, they messaged a bunch of people, and they were what could we do to improve it for next year? What do you want to see change? Because we'll make it happen. And anytime an organization is willing to do that and like put the players first, I can't, like, that's what I want. It's great.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and stop there on this episode. Thank you, everyone who's listened so far, and give a special thanks to everyone who's supported us via the Patreon. And as always, this episode is sponsored by Discount Games Inc. and Muzon Minis. You can get great deals on models from Discount Games Inc., and you can get awesome gaming aids from Muzon Minis. So, Matt, thank you for joining us on this episode. We definitely appreciate it.
Happy to be here.
And thanks again, everyone, for listening.